Oh. Welcome to Games Quest, my mission to talk about video games. My name is Matt Bauer, and this is episode 8. Today's episode is about toxic behavior in online games, and more specifically, what ways developers use to deal with it. Personally, I hardly play online games, or at least those games in which you deal with other players via voice or text chat. And I'm especially afraid of competitive games in which you form some kind of team with other players. I know I'm an average player at best, and I don't want to get yelled at for doing something wrong or I suck too much. To be honest, I haven't even experienced those behaviors myself yet, because I have avoided those games altogether. Maybe I should give them more of a chance, but their reputation just precedes them. It sounds like being a kid in school again, being bullied by the cooler kids. So it's something I just sort of stay away from. You can experience toxic behavior in any kind of multiplayer game, but not every kind of game has the same potential for it. For example, playing a round of Dota 2, you can be matched up with complete strangers and then spend 30 minutes or more trying to win. It can be frustrating when you think your teammates don't act the way you think they should. In a sports team, you know those people face to face, and even there you can experience profanity and aggressive behavior towards your teammates and your opponents. So it's not that surprising to me to have the same problems in games in which you usually can hide behind online anonymity. I think even in regular sports this has been accepted for a long time and just been part of the game. In the last few years, we have finally seen moves to address these issues and work against harmful behavior such as violence and racism. The same is true for games, and I could get most information about that from an interview on the Psychology of Games podcast with Dr. Jeffrey Lin, who was at the time leading Riot Games' player behavior team. This is 3 years old, but I think a lot of the conclusions from the interview are still valid today. Of course, it helped that with League of Legends, they have a massive player base to experiment with. They took a very analytical approach and were able to get some key findings that are relevant to anybody who wants to make an open online experience a part of their game. So I think the first interesting finding is that you cannot get rid of toxic players, but you can educate them. Some might think anybody who crosses a certain line should just be banned from a game. Apart from the obvious question of where to draw that line, it is also a nearly impossible task on a technical level to keep those players from returning. And of course, it's also lost revenue down the line as well. The more sustainable option is to educate your players. As Lin's research shows, a high percentage of players will not become repeat offenders if they just get told off once. I'm in my 30s and I tend to think about players like myself, but a lot of players are still kids or adolescents who really might not know better. It's nice to think that everybody grows up and gets proper values from their families and schools. But that is just not always the case, and probably never was. For young players like this, it is important that they actually understand what is acceptable behavior and what not. The second point is that feedback has to be as soon and as precise as possible. So, whether you get banned for something you did or you're reporting someone else for toxic behavior, time is essential here. It has a lot more impact if you actually understand what you did wrong. If you get feedback weeks later, it is way more likely that you're just outraged that you got penalized for something you probably don't even remember anymore. For the same reason, it is important that the feedback is as precise as possible, containing the actual offending chat or voice messages, and again, a clear explanation of what is not acceptable. Of course, this is not easy to achieve with thousands of matches going on at any given time, and has to be properly planned and managed early on. Feedback is also important for people who are reporting toxic behavior. If you know that somebody actually follows up on your reporting and you get a notification of what eventually happens, you're way more likely to do the same again. The opposite outcome could be that this player is frustrated with the toxic behavior and just quits a game, because it seems that the developers don't even care about it. Third and finally, positive feedback may not always be helpful. Going into this episode, I actually wanted to talk more about positive reinforcement, as I thought that the usual route of just punishing the bad actors seems very destructive, and rewarding good behavior would be the better option. However, Lin's research shows that it is not that easy, because different groups of people react differently to this. So when you look at online behavior on a scale from bad via neutral to positive, then it is the neutral people in the middle who respond the most to certain perks for good behavior. The toxic group can only be incentivized with very specific rewards that are valuable to that person. Otherwise, rewards just had no effect at all. And for people who already show good behavior, it can even have quite the opposite effect, as they learn to act positively in response to reward. They become less intrinsically motivated. Still, positive feedback can work, but it has to be quite nuanced. Riot, of course, tries this in League with its honor system, in which you vote who was the friendliest player or who was the best leader, regardless if you won or not. And you can level up your honor throughout a season, but it resets at the start of the next, thus sort of gamifying the positive attitude. Unfortunately, I haven't found any recent data on how good that actually works. Between players, it just seems to be a topic of ongoing discussion. Finally, I want to say that a positive in-game experience starts outside the game, with a community management that focuses on a positive environment for everybody, that puts down ground rules early on, enforces them, and encourages supportive behavior between community members. Just like in the game, this is ideally done in advance, but has to adjust along the way. On that topic, I have recently come across an article that asked the question what community managers can learn from game designers. I want to share that in the show notes as well, but it is a whole other topic and would be too much to get into for this episode. Also, I would recommend again that you check out this interview with Dr. Jeffrey Lin on psychology of games, and actually subscribe to that podcast. If that sounds at all interesting to you, Jamie Madigan produces some excellent content there. So that's all for today. Please do subscribe to my podcast on your service of choice. GamesQuest is available on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and most other apps. Also, I would love to hear any comments or feedback on this episode or GamesQuest in general. Just at me on Twitter. I'm Matt2314 on there. Or if you listen to this on the Anchor app, you can always leave me a voice message. Any other stuff I do, you can find on matt2314.com. Bye for now, and thank you so much for listening.